everyone. My name is Jordan Sanchez, and I'm the lead analyst of the Canadian telecom cable sector here at Goldman Sachs. In this session, we are excited to have George Cope, CEO of BCE. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I guess a good way to start would really be to kind of, you know, get your view in terms of your key priorities for this year, and maybe discuss some of your progress on those priorities through 2Q.
Sure. So I mean, our, you know, if you look at our portfolio, that we hold, which is the wireless, wireline, and the media assets, you know, our first financial priority for this year was that all three of the businesses continue to provide positive EBITDA growth. I think we've seen that certainly year to date, and that would be our expectation, through this year and consistent with what we've told the street, financially. Particularly important for us was on the wireline side, where we've had eight quarters of consecutive, EBITDA growth. Wireless, of course, has been performing extremely well, and within our media business, we put in place a cost structure last year, such that we'll see that, financially through this financial year. So those are, you know, some of the key points that we are trying to do financially. From an investment perspective, on the broadband side, it's the continual rollout of our LTE Advanced network, where we'll end the country with about 70% of the country will have advanced LTE, and of course, the other 96% has LTE today. And what's really interesting about that is the work we've done on carrier spectrum aggregation, where we've aggregated in some markets now 45 megs of spectrum, and we're seeing speeds, effective, true effective speeds, customers are getting from anywhere from 25 to 40 meg speeds on their device. And we'll see that across the market as we continue to grow, as we've also done fiber backhaul to our cell sites. And so, you know, for us, that's been tremendous from a positioning perspective. We're recently recognized by three different organizations as the fastest network in the country. That obviously helps in wireless positioning. And importantly, as our customers are using the video services more and more, we continue to see a growth in revenue in that portfolio. And then on the wireline side, our strategy has been fairly, again, very transparent. We have a footprint of about 10.5 million. That'll pick up a little bit when the MTS transaction that we've announced closes, as we would expect by the end, hopefully the end of this year, early into next year's first quarter. But of that footprint, about 8.5 million of that footprint is fiber to the node. Of that 8.5 million, about 3 million is fiber and right to the prem, and we're in the midst of overlaying where we have fiber to the node with fiber to the prem over the next number of years. The highest profile of that being now we're in the middle of doing Toronto, and that'll end as we get into 2018, we'll complete that. And that's the strategy we're on right across our fiber to the node footprint. All doing that within the capital intensity. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in some of the questions.
So to stick with the fiber project, I thought maybe you could provide a bit more of an overview in terms of the rationale. Why do you think now is the right time? You know, your long-term targets in terms of, you know, where that fiber build can go over time, how much are you spending? Yeah, maybe you could provide a bit more commentary on that.
Sure. I mean, you know, if we look for us, our TV product, our IPTV product, we call it Fibe TV, has done tremendously well at pulling through the broadband internet customer as well with our fiber to the node. Our product has, you know, world-leading functionality, you know, trending capabilities, catch-up TV capabilities, really, really strong functionality, and that's pulling TV market share through for us, and more importantly, adding on the broadband perspective. If we look at our investment, we're the largest broadband provider in the country with about 3.4 million internet subs, and the next closest competitor would be around 2 million. But if you look at our market share, because of history with telcos, you know, we're just now at around 37% of the market share in our markets. We've been capturing a little over 50% of the net adds the last number of years on the broadband side. And as we believe an overlay of fiber will help us target over time to get to making sure we get to what you would expect in a natural marketplace, we should ultimately get to one out of two of those customers with us on the broadband side. A very different model, obviously, than some other markets, I'd say, particularly down here, where shares have been different. And that's really why we're making the investment. Our wireline business, after 7 or 8 years, we've been able to run it, even with the decline of local access, at about a 40% margin. that's given us the room to make this fiber investment, ample room to make that fiber investment. And for those that don't follow the company, our consolidated CapEx guidance has been 17 to 17.5% roughly of revenue over a number of years. It's rather transparent. Our media business takes about 3 or 4% capital intensity. Our wireless runs at 10 to 11. Our wire lines out in the algebra of not greater than of 17.5, which works out to about 23%. So 23% capital intensity and a 40% EBITDA margin. With some EBITDA growth there gives us the room to maybe we think is the right investment for the future. The 3 million homes we're offering fiber to today, we have 1 gig services available. We'll continue to roll this fiber out, and we think that's ultimately our answer to continuing to compete head-to-head with our cable operators.
So you mentioned 3 million homes with 1 gig already. Can you talk about maybe what you're seeing in those markets in terms of, you know, trends in ARPU or penetration, things of that sort?
Yeah, I mean, we've had the good fortune of some of our markets been up for a number of years, in eastern Canada, Quebec City, that we've had in for a while. In some of those markets, we have hit the targeted 50% market share. So we have a lot of evidence to support that we'll get there with that type of capability, with the fiber capability. Also, from an operating cost perspective, there's no doubt our operating costs run as much as 35% less for our fiber homes that are done. And that's really two reasons. Importantly, once we've done the fiber in the home, the amount of problems you have with what you're leveraging off of copper just changes because you're not using the copper anymore. And so our operating costs actually change. And frankly, the work becomes in the home more with the customer because the device you have may not have those speed capabilities. And we're in the midst of rolling out, and so that'll follow us, some new modems, et cetera, to drive some of that speed as well over time, which takes costs out of the business as well because the call center calls drop because the product's just become so much more reliable. And we've seen that in all the markets that we've launched the fiber.
Gotcha, that's great. And now the CRTC has decided to kind of mandate wholesale access to fiber to the home. What are your next steps there, and what is, how does that impact your long-term expectations for fiber, I guess?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, important to understand that in Canada, fiber to the node had wholesale access as well. So we've had wholesale requirements to wholesale our internet access for a number of years. We were hopeful, but we weren't successful in arguing that the type of incremental investment for fiber we were hoping wouldn't require the continuation of access to our wholesale. That didn't happen. We'll wait over the number. It'll be a number of months, probably early next year, before we'll know what that pricing will be. So clearly it creates some arbitrage on our network. But we've been able to manage that, as people would have seen in the FTTN world, and still been able to hold the margins where we are. And we've also recently, in our wireless business, we have a flanker brand called Virgin that does very well in what we would call the youth segment or the discount segment, depending on which market. And we've recently launched that brand on the wireline side. So in that space, we'll compete. In the market, if there is a flanker or discount market, we'll compete there leveraging the Virgin brand, and we own the Virgin brand in Canada.
Gotcha. Okay, so maybe we could just move over to the competitive landscape. I mean, what's pretty interesting about you guys is you guys have been able to take share from cable for a period of time, not necessarily what you're seeing here in the U.S. right now. But you've also recently talked to, in the last few quarters, a higher level of competitive intensity. And so maybe you could just provide an update in terms of what you're seeing from cable these days. You know, 2Q trends continued into 3Q. What are you seeing around back to school, things like that, in terms of just promotions out there?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's seasonality in the business, Q2 versus Q3's back to school, which obviously, you know, broadband changes versus when you have all the outs in the second quarter. So those things, of course, you know, play into the broadband markets in a third quarter, I think, in all markets. Competitive intensity is always there in the market. We push our product differentiation on TV as our lead, as we would call kind of the star of the show for us, and we then market the internet as part of that program, and that's really our focus. Some of our competitors who don't have as strong a TV product right now, they'll push their internet product and do what they do in the market. And we have three different competitors, be it Cogeco, Videotron, or Rogers, so it tends to be different according to each quarter. So it's not any less competitive than it's been. I think one of our competitors is planning to launch a TV product over the next coming months, and so they may be being a little more aggressive on price on the broadband side, waiting for that, and so we've got to react to those type of things in the market.
Makes sense. Speaking of one of your bigger cable competitors, Rogers is obviously, you said, rolling out 1 gig. They've been making a big deal about the need for speed, with 100 megabits being kind of the new baseline. What are you seeing from your base in terms of bandwidth consumption? How do you think you're fit competitively now, based on the fact that you've got still some, fiber to the node versus fiber to the home?
Yeah, no, I think it's, everyone plays the card they've got to play in the marketplace, so it's a competitive market. I think people have seen our broadband market share growth. Mm-hmm. You'll have to continue to decide as you see your results if you're seeing that and what we're doing. You know, we have 3 million of the homes capable of 1 gig if they want it. That's quite a leg up over any footprint that any of our, no one's footprint's as large as ours, so that's one. Where we're with FTTN, we're obviously fully competitive now. The TV products, I said, people are taking it, then adding the internet and not running into issues there. But one of the reasons we're doing fiber is we do anticipate the requirement for more speed over time. So it's a never-ending, it doesn't help invest as much, just a never-ending competitive marketplace. But we're happy with our competitive position on FTTN today. But we know tomorrow we're going to want that to be fiber right to the prem. If I had a magic wand, we'd convert it all tomorrow morning, but we don't. We have to build it out. And so it's just, the fact we're 3 million in and we can see the signs of the benefit of that is what's important.
What are your thoughts broadly on kind of offering unlimited more broadly across your broadband base? Unlimited data across your broadband.
Well, we in Canada, we have usage-based billing on the broadband side. So, of course, with our, therefore, we become much more pro no matter who's using the product, what the OTT products are. We're able to monetize that in the marketplace. Canadians can buy $10 and $15 add-on unlimited broadband packages, and they do. So if you're a very, very heavy OTT customer, you're probably going to pay $60 for your basic internet service, but you're going to be adding $15 or $10 for unlimited, and you've got to have a double or a triple generally in Canada to get that unlimited offering. Mm-hmm. So you can't just purchase a naked broadband and then add the unlimited. You have to have part of a bundle, whether that's wireless, local access, video, and I think you see that from our competitors as well in the marketplace, generally speaking.
So you're clearly leading with IPTV right now and pulling through on internet. You've launched a number of new capabilities recently, a couple of products. I was wondering if maybe you could spend some time talking about some of those and how they kind of position you relative to kind of your peers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was listening this morning to Comcast. They're always doing an excellent job. It is really interesting to watch the differentiation these products can give you in the marketplace. We have a functionality, and maybe you have it here, I'm not sure. I think some places you don't, but we have a trending functionality on our TV product. So, our Fibe TV, and you hit it, and it pops up the five shows that people are watching the most right then, real time. 20% of our customers flip to one of those five programs as soon as they see one of the five programs. So it's interesting. And then the second piece is we launched a catch-up feature. So you can actually then catch up to the, if you haven't taped the show, you can catch up the beginning of that show. So if you walk in and anything is, you walk in, it's 15 minutes and you haven't PVR'd, the show started, you see what the top five shows are, and then you hit catch up, it goes back to the beginning. It's very good for us. The media companies, the broadcast companies approved it, they like it, because you can't fast forward through it. And so they monetize the advertising on the back of that and something that would have been missed. So it's great differentiation for the customer. You can actually go back 30 hours, so if you haven't PVR'd. And then the other one we've done that we think is really exciting, in the home, we have an app. Any laptop, iPad works. You basically put your access code in once, and then from then on forever, it recognizes you in the home. And every device in the home uses our Fibe TV service. Doesn't matter what screen you're on. And it's pretty powerful. And then that exact application goes with you mobile. And other than depending on what the broadcast rights are, you can use that application in a Wi-Fi or in a mobile, depending on where you are. So we're integrating that in as well. And so those are giving us differentiation in the marketplace. And, we put Netflix on the set-top box, 8-10 months ago. to make sure we, again, same power, making sure our users had all that capability. And, of course, huge users of Netflix, great for us because it keeps people in the our product ecosystem, and at the same time generates significant internet usage, which, of course, we're in that business as well.
Makes sense. Another thing you did recently was you decided to offer IPTV on a standalone basis.
Yeah.
Beginning next year, I guess.
Yeah.
So clearly, I mean, over time it's kind of pulled through broadband, but what do you see going forward now that it's kind of offered on a standalone basis?
Yeah, we really made a decision to offer it. We've never offered IPTV without also taking the internet. One, we had some concerns that the regulator was wanting to know why we were separating it in complete transparency. Secondly, though, when we looked at the marketplace, one of our competitors, not in our market but in the West, TELUS had done it. It seemed to have worked for them. We owned and acquired Bell Alliance. They had done it and still seen a lot of the bundling anyway. And then finally, from our perspective, if there's going to be a wholesale broadband market, we want to still be able to layer the TV subscription on top of that. And if you had to have our internet service and you couldn't get it, then we were really giving the cable companies that TV subscription. If they had their wholesale broadband from one company and then added TV, they could add cable, but they couldn't add ours. So we didn't want to hand some market share over to the cable operators as our product's now starting to mature. And that was probably the key reason for it.
That makes sense. Maybe we can move over to the skinny basic package that was kind of implemented earlier this year. I guess by later this year, you'll have to also offer both a small bundle and an a la carte option. You guys came out earlier and kind of offered both. What are you seeing in terms of customer response right now from that, and what's the broad implications for the, I guess, the pay TV industry and the media group?
Yeah, so the last part of the question, that's a broader one. On the skinny basic, we were mandated to give consumers a price point and a product with some basic content in it. Subscriptions for that service have probably met our expectations. It's been fairly low, but that's because of the desire of the consumer for enormous amount of content now. So it's really what's in it. So it hasn't had that big an impact, probably consistent with what we thought it would have. And, of course, you never know. But, you know, I listened this morning to some of the other presentations. People just want multiple choice. Mm-hmm. And so a skinny basic is really an entry-level price point, but not enough content in it to really cause a significant change in our media assets. And so in the second part of the question?
Well, just the customer response, which you kind of answered that,
yeah.
and the long-term impact. All right, so maybe moving over to kind of the concern around cord cutting and things like that or over the top. I mean, you guys have the largest broadband network. You're the largest pay TV provider. You're vertically integrated. I mean, how do you think Canada more broadly is kind of positioned to deal with over the top, and how do you kind of sit within that as well?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, over the top is how does the consumer want to consume content? I mean, that's ultimately what we have to make sure we're able to meet the demand for that. So one has been with our TV product. The other, we have an OTT product called Crave, which is really an SVOD product with the Showtime and the HBO content available and other content. And people can subscribe to that OTT or in their TV subscription. And so, we move into that market at the pace that the market's demanded it. And then being the largest media company, we have a $3 billion media business and the number one leading conventional specialty and sports networks. Our ability to take some of that OTT direct will be a function of the demand and the economics for us. And really, at the moment, we're getting such subscriptions through our traditional model. We're quite comfortable with how we're monetizing that. Having said that, we created the Crave product to take some of the Showtime and HBO content direct to the consumer, and some consumers are obviously going to subscribe to it on that basis. So we're obviously putting our finger in every one of these markets and playing in each one of them. And then at the same time, our core strategy is win the broadband both on wireless and wireline through the investment thesis. And at the end of the day, if you win that relationship, you almost become indifferent to which way that OTT world evolves, and that's really core to how we're building the business.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, how do you think you've positioned the Crave TV product versus maybe Show Me, which is another over-the-top product up there, and Netflix, and where do you think you're kind of competitively different there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really about the content, right? We're competitively different. Obviously, we have content that's different than Netflix, right? Netflix also has an enormous amount of the movie content. We don't really play in that space with Crave. A Crave for us is really about, the SVOD library of HBO on the SVOD library and first run some first time with Showtime and other content, which is extremely powerful content, as people here will know. And we think that's what's driving that product to pull through at a good pace. We're pleased with where it fits. Would it fit in our portfolio if we were not also a vertically integrated and had the large media company? No, it would be hard to make it work. But does it make it work across our entire portfolio? Absolutely.
Gotcha. So the residential business we largely kind of covered there. Top line trends there are positive, but overall in wireline, you have struggled a bit to grow. And it's largely been due to the kind of the business side of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering if you could provide a little bit of an update maybe on the economy, what you're seeing there, and what you're seeing within the business segment.
Yeah, I think our wireline revenue, will be a little stronger as we go forward. It'll just start to come a little bit better because of the mix of our consumer versus our business side continues to get a little bit better. We are very strong, successful in the business market. But quite frankly, we have a significant market share there, and GDP isn't, at one to, we had negative GDP a quarter ago, but, we get north of GDP of 2 to 3%. We think we can grow top line in that space. Otherwise, pretty hard to get top line growth in that portfolio, not different than most other telcos you follow around the world. And so that's really, it really is about cost structure through technology, consumer growth, and maintaining market share on the business-to-business side and wireline. And that combined has driven, eight quarters of consecutive wireline EBITDA growth. And as I mentioned, we think we're well positioned through, as we go forward through this year, which is based on what we told the street from a guidance perspective.
And within your business segment, you serve the enterprise, medium, small businesses.
Yes.
What are you kind of seeing in those sub-verticals?
Yeah, so we have three segments on the wireline side, you're correct. Small is probably where we compete the most with cable operators. That's where they would definitely be, I think, saying they're trying to gain share from us. So that becomes probably more of a competitive issue. If we see declines there, it's got to do with competitive issues. Mid-market, we're probably taking share back. We've seen some growth there. It's not our biggest of the three, unfortunately. We've seen some growth there. Part of that is some of the CLECs, I think, have changed over time and maybe more focused on just the wholesale space. And on the large enterprise, we have a tremendous franchise, tremendous portfolio. But, if you take one sector, like the financial sector, we would probably serve all the Canadian banks. There's not a lot of top-line resource growth there, and so that's hard for us to get top-line growth in that portfolio. It's really there about maintaining and managing the share and managing our cost structure against it.
You brought it up a couple of times, but one of the strengths for sure on the wireline side has been what's been going on with EBITDA.
Mm-hmm.
And so the top line hasn't necessarily grown just yet on a consistent basis, but EBITDA has been growing for 8 quarters, and obviously that's a function of margin expansion. And so what opportunities do you see? Well, one, what have you seen from margin expansion going forward? What are the key drivers? And then two, going forward, given what you expect on the top line, what's the opportunity to kind of continue to grow EBITDA?
Well, we've got to have broadband growth. And we've got to have TV growth, right, between the two. And really it's about the broadband growth, TV helping us drive broadband. And then the other side of the equation is the change of the customer of not wanting to call centers, wanting to use applications for solutions. Our call volume, I don't want to hold myself, but roughly over the last 6-7 years is down 50% into our call centers. And we see a 5-6% decline annually into the call centers because people are using the tools that we put on their handset, such that they don't have to call in to make rate plan changes, be a wireless or wireline, change channel selections and what have you. So that's one area that cost naturally changes in our business. The other is as we do roll out fiber, the truck rolls drop, and the truck rolls being repair work, and we have the largest fleet of vehicles in Canada. We have 17,000 vehicles on the road, and over time, as that business moves to fiber, we should over time see costs change there as well as that model changes.
Gotcha.
And so I think that's really the telcos. That's why we're seeing the margins we're seeing and why we think we'll continue to hopefully be able to continue to execute in a tough revenue part of our business, enough revenue and enough cost to keep the story that we've been able to generate for the last 7 or 8 years.
Fair enough. We're about to move into the wireless section of the discussion, but before that I wanted to see if there were any questions from the audience.
There.
Yep. Wait for the mic, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Maybe just a quick follow-up on the cadence of fiber rollout. Given some of the good returns, initial signs on the fiber rollout, why not thinking about, you know, accelerating the rollout maybe to closer to 4 or 5 years. How should we think about maybe puts and takes around that?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, first of all, we don't know if we could pace it much faster, to be completely transparent. 600,000 to 700,000 households or premises a year is the pace that we think we're going to be on. When we look at our one, our you know, we have a 1 gig service available to 3 million households, but in complete transparency, a lot of your devices you're using there wouldn't give you access to 1 gig today. So we're way out there on the technology curve. We see the demand for that growing over time. So the acceleration is hard to see that we would need to do that given how competitive we are. We think it's the right discipline approach to do it. Obviously, we saw some dramatic change in results that said, boy, this is, you could always look to accelerate. But from what we've seen, we think at the moment we have the right balance. We think we have the right performance against it, and that's really why we're driving it at that pace. You know, at the end of the day, once we're done fiber, we can go from 1 gig to 10 gig services at the end of the day, and we're set, right, in terms of a real, real great broadband experience for the country going forward.
Any others? All right, well, let's move over to the wireless side of the business. So the big three generally reported pretty strong postpaid net adds in the second quarter across the board. At an industry level, I mean, what do you think drove those subscriber trends at this point? And then more broadly, maybe you could just talk about the competitive intensity you've seen over the first half of the year, how that's kind of compared.
Yeah, you know, it's harder for me to comment on our competitors because they'll obviously do what they need to do. From a market perspective, we are very pleased, and we have been for a number of years, with our wireless results. For us, what we're most pleased with is we're generating, we've been leading on postpaid net adds, but that's not really the metric we're focused on. Most importantly, we've led the industry in service revenue growth, in absolute service revenue growth dollars and in percentage. And most importantly, captured, I think the last 3 years, north of 50% of the incremental EBITDA growth in the industry. So if you can grow your subs 35% of the market share and grow EBITDA 40 to 50% of the industry growth, you've got the right mix of customers and cost structure, and that's what we've done for 3 years, running. I think we're 65% of this year's EBITDA growth so far in the country. So that's really our focus. We're really pleased with our network offering right now in the marketplace. We honestly believe that if someone migrates to leverage our broadband network for wireless, that if you're leaving us, it might be over, you know, something to do with maybe a pricing issue or something we haven't done right from a customer service, but it wouldn't be the pure product because there's really nothing really like it in North America today in terms of what customers have access to. And we think that's driving increased usage, and that's what's driving increased ARPU. Not necessarily pricing, but people are using the product, you know, more and more. We saw some numbers the other day, and it's only one geography, so I don't have to worry about it being read into being our overall quarter, but in one of our summer geographies, we saw usage up over 130% year over year on the broadband side. I mean, that's the explosion we're seeing because there's no buffering anymore on the video use, so the video explosion, you know, is truly happening on the wireless side with this spectrum aggregation that we're doing.
Gotcha. Maybe moving into the back half of the year, I mean, a big storyline for the last few quarters has been the double cohort, but you're technically kind of lapping that.
Yes.
From a year-over-year basis in the back half. But now you've also got the new iPhone out there. So what are your expectations for competition, I guess, in the back half of the year, given these two kind of...
Yeah, I mean, from September to Christmas is always the most competitive period because that's where there's a lot of growth in the industry from a net app perspective. I doubt that will be any different than any other year in the marketplace. Double cohort, you're right, we have lapped it. For those who don't know what that means, in Canada, we were asked to regulate it to have only two-year contracts, not 2- and 3-year contracts. Don't ask me why. But 2 and 3. So what happened was everyone who was 3 years and 2 years obviously came up all at the same time 1 year. That was last year in 12 months. So there was a belief, and correctly so, that, of course, our retention spending would go up in the industry, and it did. We've now lapped that. So for us, our retention spend's been more stable the last few quarters, and you'd probably look, you know, at 12 to 13% of revenue is roughly where our retention spend is and probably will be, you know, as we look throughout the end of this year. Those are the type of numbers you'll see there. So as the double cohort, as we've lapped it, you may see, we'll have to wait and see, you might see a little better industry churn. We certainly saw that last quarter across the industry, just because we've gone through some of the math on that, and it helps out. And of course, lower churn is a good thing for investors, and obviously very good for us with our customers. So you know, maybe we'll see some of that in the back half. And yes, the new iPhone just launched. Obviously, quantities were very limited in Canada, so we'll see how that plays out. But it creates a lot of excitement, creates traffic. That's always good for the industry, and so we'll see how that plays out in the quarter.
Gotcha. And then maybe just more of a longer-term kind of competitive kind of question. Shaw completing its acquisition of Wind. What are you seeing so far from that combination to date? And then kind of what are your long-term expectations for this company? I guess what kind of hurdles do you think they kind of have to overcome to kind of be a bit more of a force in the market?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's early days, right? Shaw company is a brand well known in Canada, so that's a competitor. You know, you never want your fourth player to have a great brand, but they have a positive brand. But it'll take a while, I think, before we start to see the impacts in the market. Our own instincts would be, and I'd let them talk to it, but our competitive instincts would be they'll probably be stronger where they have their cable footprint, and it'll be maybe a little more of a challenge for them in the markets where they don't have that footprint, and we'll look, obviously, to then competitively leverage that. I think our core advantage over the fourth player will be our network wireless speeds, and I think they're going to have to invest a lot of money to compete with us head-to-head, and where we welcome that competition, not just from migrating to LTE, but also the amount of spectrum we've purchased over the years to make sure we have this ability to aggregate spectrum so we can give these speeds to compete in the marketplace. So we'll meet our competitor in the marketplace.
Now you guys, you know, have a very large broadband footprint, increasingly becoming fiber. What are your thoughts on potentially trying to, you know, utilize that core benefit or advantage to kind of bundle and go to market in that form? Have you seen that demand from customers in Canada, or is that something that you consider?
Yeah, well, we have the largest wireline wireless overlap footprint for sure. So it is a competitive advantage. I think it's, for us, a big competitive advantage when we look out with wireless now, where we've done fiber to all backhaul to all of our cell sites. And so, you know, those are the important components of it. We do some bundling in Canada with that in mind. It's been less so. We do a lot more, which would be similar down here, a lot more of the bundles within wireless alone, where you have four or five family members sharing data buckets. That's been much more powerful, mm-hmm. And also in terms of churn, than necessarily the link back to also the wireline piece. Having said that, more and more it's becoming the household, and so the underpin of our wireline footprint being so strong, we think, is a great asset for us going forward. And we do think, you know, what we're investing in fiber, which is, you know, $1 billion a year, ultimately it means we'll have fiber done through all of our footprint, which also will set us up great for wireless, because wireless over time, the cell sites, as everyone know, are going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and ultimately will end up in some profile that looks like 5G. And if you've put fiber in across your entire wireline footprint, then your wireless business is obviously going to have a benefit. And we think that's one of the competitive advantages of our asset mix and why we've kept all these asset mixes together.
Gotcha. Now, another key strong point for you guys over the last few quarters and years has really been your ARPU growth.
Mm-hmm.
It's been superior versus your peers, and you kind of closed the gap, which is something you were kind of hoping to do over time. So now that gap is largely closed, what's the outlook for ARPU growth at this point? What are some of the key drivers? And then, you know, you used to highlight three specific areas where there was a gap. It was either less exposure to kind of the West, less exposure to corporate accounts, roaming. I mean, where are you sitting on some of those areas right now?
Yeah, I think you know, we've moved the company. Clearly, our wireless business has moved from being, it was a significant difference from the customer base we had there for our ARPU, to being actually, I think on par, or at least certainly better than our competitors in terms of what we're generating from our customer base. Now, I think a large part of what's driving the increase in ARPU is the network leadership on terms of the customer usage. You know, because you start getting 25 to 30 meg speeds on a wireless device, as I said, because there's no buffering on video, suddenly the usage starts to grow. And I think that's what's driving for us the incremental ARPU. And, you know, how that continues to to play out. We're just going to have to see in the marketplace. But we continue to see usage grows, and if usage grows, then, you know, hopefully on the margin, that means some increase in ARPU as we continue to go forward.
Now, you're a vertically integrated company. One of your peers is as well. They've decided to kind of use content to kind of help with the ARPU story in some forms, or maybe some of the sub-games as well. What's your thought process on maybe kind of trying to, you know, use some of your content more in ways that could kind of maybe help that business as well?
Well, I think we first of all, most importantly, our content business, we sell all of our content to our distribution partners, and many of them are our competitors. So the core to that business is making sure that we're selling our content to the Telus's, the Cogecos, the Rogers, and what have you, because they have a lot of, obviously, eyeballs that they deliver through their distribution channel. So that's one clear point for us. Secondly, if we are looking to leverage our content assets, we're looking to monetize them, not include them. Otherwise, we're just leaving, from us, revenue on the table. So that's really been our approach. But I think leveraging our assets, people would have seen it with the launch of our Crave TV, where you know, the Crave TV subscription service is available over the top, and it's available on Bell 5 TV, but it's not available on Rogers Cable. So that is leveraging our content, and you know, that's the SVOD library of HBO and Showtime, which you can only get if you're with our TV service or you're subscribing over the top. I guess that's leveraging probably in the marketplace against one of our competitors.
Gotcha. Makes sense. You previously talked about 5G. You know, the big three have kind of been involved in sort of testing it out. You guys recently successfully completed a test yourself. Maybe you could talk about what trials you're doing, what you're kind of seeing these days. I know it's still early days, but, you know, what's your expectations for the rollout? What are you seeing from early trials?
Well, it's very, very early days. I can't put enough buries in front of that for the investing community to probably satisfy everyone. But it's very early days. My own view is, I think when we get to the, I guess the Summer Olympics 2020 in Japan, my own sense, that might be the showcase for what we see. That's my instincts. And then I think after that, we'll see. But then you start to get into then what's, you know, what becomes global commercially. And, you know, I guess what we'll do, we'll migrate to the technology when it's at the mature enough stage to do it when we need it in the marketplace. And I guess part of things getting ready for that is the fiber build we're doing now, because if there's one thing we see with, even in 4G folks with LTE Advanced, you've got to have fiber backhaul, or you basically, the bottleneck becomes the backhaul, right? So we're doing that now anyway. The sites will shrink. In theory, that's really what's behind it all, and more capacity will come from that in broader speeds. But, you know, we're a long way from that, from an investment thesis or, as everyone in the room here concerns about, kneeing the curves of capital. I don't see it in that 4 or 5 year window.
So maybe we could just move to media really quickly. I mean, we touched on Crave TV, we touched on pick and play adoption, but more broadly, could you talk about kind of some of the trends you're seeing in the media business? Another thing you guys talk about is punching outside the weight class. What kind of drives you to be able to kind of do that?
Well, you know, our media portfolio is strong. Just in this room, you wouldn't be as familiar with it, but, you know, we own, for instance, the largest outdoor media company as well in Canada, 33,000 locations. We own 106 radio stations, would be like 1,000 down here, and we're the largest specialty and conventional TV broadcaster. So to advertisers, that matters. So we can go to national brands with a solution for exposure that no one else in the country can. We think that lets us, quote, punch above our weight a little bit in terms of what we can offer major brands in the country. Obviously, the challenge with that business is move with the eyeballs as they move more and more OTT. Finding that balance is obviously what our media folks are trying to do, making sure our cost structure is in line to support that. And I think we've generally done, you know, not a bad job at doing that. We also, through our ownership of Maple Leaf Sports and the Montreal Canadiens and Toronto Argonauts, and that have also backed our way into, and Toronto Raptors have backed away in the securing of content for our sports network, which, of course, you know, is where live content is still extremely important for advertisers. And making sure we have secure access to that content has been important as well to monetize there. So, you know, I could talk about that business for a while. To put it in context for everyone, it is about $700 million of our roughly, you know, getting close to $9 billion EBITDA. Mm-hmm. So just to put the numbers in context, important strategically for us that it contributes, and it does contribute to the strategy.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Take a moment now to see if there are any questions on the wireless or media sides before kind of moving on. All right. Maybe we could just talk about, you know, uses of the cash and capital allocation at BC. You guys generate quite a bit of free cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys kind of look to put that to work?
Yeah, so our, you know, our financial model's been boring, but supportive of a dividend growth model for 7 or 8 years. Our objective is a payout ratio of 65 to 75% of our free cash flow. We've been in that payout ratio for 7 or 8 years. Dividend growth that's become an expectation of 5%, not one that we've set, but the street's expected. And really our capital intensity, we run it on a blended basis of about 17%. Company generates, after all dividends, $800 to $900 million this year of free cash flow. Last few years that we've used for some spectrum auctions. This year we used it for an acquisition, rolling in a data center company, Q9. And usually at the end of the year, depending on what's happened on interest rates, which have never gone up that I can remember, with a, we have a pension fund, and we sometimes take some of the surplus cash. We'll put that up against the pension, which helps us delever, because from the rating agencies, that, of course, is debt on our balance sheet. That's really what we've been doing with surplus cash. And really, it's about positioning this company for 2017 and 18 to continue that dividend story. And we do that on the back of good wireless results, steady wireline results, and a nice portfolio on media.
You mentioned the data center purchase. And, you know, some of your peers have been investing in data centers as well. But if you talk to some of the U.S. telcos, they've actually kind of been thinking about divesting those assets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are you guys kind of seeing up there? Is there any kind of what are you guys seeing there, and what do you think kind of?
Yeah, I mean, look, on the data center business for us, we see a connectivity to data centers that our customers of Bell of about 70%. So we acquired Q9. The connectivity of Bell services into those data centers was running around 20 to 25. And so for us, we're huge in the enterprise corporate space. It's a high capital intensity business for our customers. It's not where they want to put their capital. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's right in really the sweet spot of what we do. But the real key to us owning data centers for data center purposes wouldn't be a model to, for us to hunt with particularly. But the connectivity, taking that to 70% off those customers from 30 is where the upside is for us. That's really what we're in the midst of. That's why we just rolled the other asset in. But even combined, that entire business doesn't move the needle for us, but it's part of our portfolio relationships with our corporate customers and our mid-market customers.
Sticking with M&A, probably the last question given the amount of time we have here, but you guys recently announced you were going to be acquiring MTS. Maybe you could just quickly go over the strategic rationale. Why was that the right asset, right time? You know, how comfortable you are with the synergies? But then also maybe, you know, the approval process and how that's kind of...
Sure. So right time, Manitoba Tel, for those that we owned it 100 years ago, haven't been able to own it for 100 years, so it was the right time. MTS sold a company called Allstream. With Allstream there, there in essence was a poison pill on us ever buying it, because there's no way we'd ever get it through a regulatory process given Allstream's space on the wireline enterprise space. So they sold that business, became, we thought, an asset that fit. It's right next to our footprint. Mm-hmm. All the same businesses we're in. And so for us, a perfect fit. Grows our wireless, internet, and TV and broadband business. And so that's really the key strategic rationale for the acquisition. And the asset was for sale, so it was time to look at it given what was going on with Allstream not there anymore. So now we just await regulatory approval. We would hope to have regulatory approval by the end of this year or early into next year. I really don't have any update on that. The CRTC has a very small role to play. This is really about Competition Bureau. That's the key play, and also the government's view ultimately in the province of Manitoba. Do they want four players versus three? This structure, even though we've structured to sell some of the subscribers, takes the industry to three in that particular market. We'll have to wait how the government, what the government's decision is on that in terms of the structure we put in place. But I feel confident that it's a great fit for us, and I'm confident, but I'm not the regulator, hopeful and confident that we'll get it done.
Okay. And with that, looks like we've run out of time. So
great.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.